What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Jack Myers is the author of Hooked Up, a new generation's surprising take on sex, politics, and saving the world. He offers a fascinating in-depth look at the hooked-up generation born between 1991 and 1995 and how their unique experience will change everything, including religion and culture, relationships, politics, education, entertainment, and even technology. Jack, welcome to 411 Teen.
Dr. Liz, it's great to be on 411 Teen. Your audience is the audience I've written a book all about.
Yes, and I tell you, I read your book and I loved it. It was great. I have been looking forward to talking to you because I think your perspectives are so insightful and it just opens up a different world for those of us who are in the rock ages, you know?
Well, you know, the teens and college students today have grown up hearing about how difficult it's going to be for them, how challenging it's going to be for them to get a job, how they've grown up with economic chaos, with technological acceleration, with social upheaval, with 9/11, a war on terror, and all they've heard about is how chaotic and disruptive it is. But yet, this is a generation that, because they're the first to grow up on the internet, is the first one to really understand how to create stability out of chaos and how to use the internet for positive good. So it's a very hopeful and positive book about this generation. I think it's the first book that's been published that really speaks to this to the teens and to college students in a way that says not only do you have a positive future, but you may be the next great generation.
Well, you know, what I found so good about it is that I think it opens up a whole new perspective for those who have not been tuned in to being hooked up. I mean, you know, we don't have an idea of the impact that it has on one's total life. Every aspect of the life is different. So often you hear parents say, well, when I did such and such in my world, our worlds don't compare.
They don't compare.
They don't compare.
This has been a really terrific book for parents and for educators. The next step is really for politicians, religious leaders, and others to really begin understanding and following how important it is that they not only pay attention to this generation, but embrace them and empower them. We're really dependent on this the next generation to enter the workforce, to enter society, to enter the adult years with the knowledge and the understanding of how to use the internet for positive good and for creating stability in a chaotic world.
Mm-hmm. For the listening audience, would you give us the characteristics of the hooked up generation?
Well, that's a major task. but first of all, they as you mentioned, they were born 1991 to 1995. Now, most people group this generation as part of the millennials. The millennials are typically described as born 1982 to 2002, but right in the middle, in 1993, came the internet. And the internet's a dividing line for everyone born before and after. So I started doing research on that transformation. What's the difference between the pre and the post-internet? And what I found was this five-year generation in college today, born 91 to 95, who are a bridge generation. They're the first generation to cross the chasm, if you will, between the pre and the post-internet age. So they have a lot of the baggage of the older internets, having grown up in this two-decade period of political polarization, of economic upheaval, and social chaos. and disruption. But they're also our first window into internet natives, into the future generations of those who have grown up with the internet. As leaders, this group they're internet pioneers. I call them internet pioneers, or the hooked up generation. And as pioneers, they're leaders. They're the first to cross this bridge. And they, as leaders, they believe in several things. They're focused on building. They're focused on building a more stable future. They're more tolerant. They believe in building a more tolerant society and doing social good and using online tools to bring people together. And most importantly, they're interested in creating stability, economic balance and stability, social balance and stability, and political balance and stability. Some of the qualities they have an incredible ability to multitask. They're citizens of the world. For them, tolerance and diversity and human equality is a birthright. They don't understand the concept of having to enforce or encourage human equality and civil rights. They're uniquely qualified to manage and direct the internet transformation. In other ways, they're sexually liberated, but they value marriage and relationships, although and we can talk more about that later. Yeah. They're materialistic, but not interested in material rewards. And, you know, what's interesting, Liz, when asked to describe their ideal jobs, their define their vision of a successful life, the vast majority, almost all of them, say that making a contribution to the world is more important than making money. And they understand the challenges they face as they enter the workforce. They believe in individual rights. They live in a post-feminist world, and they're a very female-centric group. And politically, they identify themselves as moderate or progressive, and they do plan to vote.
Well, you've covered all the aspects of them. And, I think what I found to be so insightful is just the breadth of how much, what an impact the internet has on this generation, and how they are so different from the rest of us. Because they are, and many, their perspectives are different. Their worlds are different. Now, I know some pundits have kind of dismissed this generation as, what shall I say, they're over-entertained or under-informed. How do you feel about that? What's your position?
Well, first of all, you mentioned growing up on the internet and how different they are. To them, the internet is like the air we breathe. It's just there. It's not something they go on or do. They're incredibly well-informed, and I'm not exactly sure how. I think a lot of their knowledge comes from osmosis. They just absorb it from being on the internet and having access to as much information and knowledge as they do. But they crave knowledge. There's so much information out there, and we're exposed to so much information. They have a unique ability to look past all the information and seek out the knowledge, and that's one of the main differentiating aspects of them. They're not impressed by a lot of facts and figures and statistics. They're not impressed by opinions. They are able to look through the statistics at reality because they're exposed to it online, because they have so many friends on Facebook, because they're constantly communicating. They're following Twitter. They're following Reddit. They're following the world, and they're very aware of the world. So while they're criticized for being over-entertained, for playing games online. While they're doing all that, they're also really learning a lot about the world, and they're gaining skills and tools that as they enter the workforce, I believe, are going to be extremely sought after. Tools for fighting through the incredible amount of information we have and finding the relevant meaning behind the information and the relevance of that information to their lives and how they can help not only themselves but help others.
I know you describe their approach to the world in reading as being wary. And would you elaborate on that? Why are they so wary? Why do you use that?
Yeah, I said that if you could describe them in a word, it's wary. Mm-hmm. They're wary about having strong feelings or taking strong positions. They've been exposed to so much polarization in their lives. They've been exposed to the collapse of financial ethics and economic upheaval, that they're very wary about institutions and large organizations. They've been exposed to so many warnings about the debt they're accruing in college educations and about the availability of jobs, that they're wary about their future prospects and their plans and their ability to contribute to and influence the world. There's not very many parts of society that have been stained in the last two decades, and they've seen that, and they're wary about everyone from politicians to teachers to coaches to religious leaders to organizations, movements, trends, fads. But they're dealing with that in unique ways. Rather than being turned off by it, they're focused on how they can contribute and how they can improve and how they can advance the state of the world. And that's why the name of my book is A New Generation Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. They don't necessarily believe they can change the world, but I believe they can save the world from a lot of the corruption and disruption we've had in the last 20 years.
Let me talk a little bit about the preparation of your book. Just what did you investigate? What did your investigation of this generation involve? What variables did you look at, and how did you go about it?
Yeah, the first step was really to focus on what the goals of the book were. And when I found through research this generation, this little pocket, the bridge generation, I decided to really focus in on them, and I did a major online survey through a company called Ipsos OTX, which is one of the largest research companies in the world, and we did an online survey of 1,000 kids born between the ages of between 1991 and 95, over 100 questions, nationally representative, so it represented all regions, all ethnic groups, and nationally proportionate to their population, and then we did over 200 survey interviews out in the field. I had researchers out across the country on college campuses and high schools, talking to people on different topics. And the book covers everything from education, religion, to Harry Potter and Rugrats.
Very thorough. Very thorough. What was the most surprising finding you discovered?
Well, that was their sexual attitudes. What I learned that was very positive is that this is a generation that's focused on goals rather than relationships. Their heads are down. They're working hard. 60% of them are working in college to help pay their college costs. They're concentrating on their careers and their educations, and they're less interested in forming and maintaining romantic relationships, and that applies especially to females. Over the next decade, more than 60% of college graduates will be female, and an even larger percentage of grad students will be female. So it's a very female-centric society. More and more women will be entering the workforce, and they are bringing a different set of sensibilities when they enter college. Rather than focusing on, dating and a guy, they're really focused on short-term relationships that are meeting and serving their own needs, interests, attitudes, and values. And that includes short-term sexual partnerships. Again, hooked up as hooking up not just online, but hooking up in relationships. And, we all know the term hooked up. It's a very ambiguous term. We're not sure whether it means just meeting for a cup of coffee or hooking up online or hooking up for sex. And it means all of the above in many ways, and it's purposely ambiguous, I think. But
let me ask you, hold your thoughts for a second. We'll get back to this. We need to take a brief break, and we'll return momentarily. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me is Jack Myers. Jack Myers is a media ecologist who speaks internationally on the emerging media technologies on society, culture, and business. The author of several books, his career includes management positions at CBS Television and ABC Radio. He is the chairman of Media Advisory Group, which advises more than 250 advertising, marketing, entertainment, and financial companies. Jack, I had to interrupt you because we were talking about the sexual attitudes of the hooked-up generation, the influences and the values that differ dramatically from earlier generations. I'd like to ask you to continue.
Sure.
And let's look at, you know, them as far as sex, as far as dating and commitment, and that hooked up, meaning that spontaneous sexual entertainment.
Well, it seems, Liz, that the weekend ritual of dinner and a movie is gone, you know, the way of the dodo bird. And it's been largely replaced by no-strings-attached spontaneous sexual encounters known as hookups. And they have a very casual approach. What's interesting is that both men and women are coming into relationships with a very different attitude. And there is no negative baggage attached to a woman being sexy or being sexual. They can be sexy and smart, sexual and serious. And there's no baggage attached to having multiple casual hookups and sexual encounters by either the men or the women. The last thing that college females want today are relationships, long-term relationships, that require them to take their eye off of their future, off of their future focus on their careers, on their jobs. They'd love to get married. They want to have children, according to my research, but not until late 20s, early 30s. And they want to continue working. So they really want to get their careers on track. They want to get through school. They want to be successful. They want to get jobs. And they really want to focus on that without being dragged down, if you will, by immature guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, guys, what's interesting is the women are even more accepting of the immaturity of guys. They're accepting of the, you know, the guy who's in the beer commercial who's just, you know, looking for the chick.
Because they're just looking for the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know?
And so they're much more tolerant of the realities of each other, and that extends to their sexuality, and that extends to gay lifestyles as well. This is a generation that's grown up, again, online, where everyone is equal, where there's no bias against sexual proclivity, and there, in many high schools, there are LGBT clubs, and certainly in colleges, there is more and more acceptance of gay lifestyle. So they really don't understand the concept of having to approve or pass laws that accept gay marriage. For the vast majority of this generation, they simply think it's a birthright to apply any basic sexual reality to your life. That's, you know, they consider that within the norm. Now, by the same token, there's a larger percentage of this generation who are following abstinent lifestyles. It's up from 12% a decade ago to 17%. So there are many who are following a different pattern. And the number of sexual encounters they have through college is really not that great. According to the research done by others, the average graduating college female has about 7 sexual relationships during the course of her 4 years, and the average guy about 9 relationships. So while to some older folk that may seem like a high number, it's really, I think, a realistic demonstration of the fact that sexual relationships are just part of their lifestyle, to be managed, controlled, nuanced, and frankly not that meaningful.
Well, you know, given the differences, are they equipped to maintain successful relationships? I mean, how they interact, how they even flirt is very different than other generations. I mean, they flirt online.
They you know, they'll meet someone and then they'll check them out on Facebook, mm-hmm. and they'll friend them, and then they'll tweet or you know, Facebook message back and forth, and often not even see each other and form a relationship without even having a date. And then, you know, then they may get together casually, they may get together sexually, and then continue the relationship online. It's just a part of their lifestyle that it's very hard for many of those over 25, over 30 even,
that's right,
to understand or comprehend. But it, to them, it's just the norm.
So their commitment to maintaining relationships is still there when they do get into that relationship, is what I hear.
In fact, because they believe in relationships, and because it's more important for them to take care of their own needs, career
mm-hmm.
needs,
mm-hmm.
And lifestyle focus, because they're going to be entering into marriages and having children a little later in life, and because they've seen so many of their parents getting divorced, and so many of their friends' parents getting divorced, I believe they're going to enter into relationships much more seriously. And I'm forecasting that by 2030, 2040, we'll be looking back and seeing a steady decline in divorce rates.
Well, you read my mind, because I was just going to ask you just what impact you think this will have on future relationships and looking at divorce rates and single parenting homes. Do you think that that's going to change?
I do. I believe it will decline. I believe they'll enter into relationships. When they decide to enter into relationships, it'll be because they truly understand the goals. They have equality in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The male and the female will come into the relationship with, in many instances, equal earning power. When in many instances, the females will have better earning power than the males, but the males of this generation are not going to be turned off. They're not going to be threatened by that. There's going to be a higher percentage of stay-at-home dads or dads who are working out of the home. A larger number of parents will find jobs in the home because of their sophistication in the internet and because of the growth of online job opportunities. So I believe they're going to be much more conscientious as parents. They're going to understand how to use the internet as a tool to help educate their children. They're going to be able to use the internet to help build stronger foundations of relationships, not just through Skype and video chat to stay together when they're apart, but when they're together to find common interests and to move through life on the same path and on the same schedule, if you will, going into the relationship with an understanding of what the goals for the relationship are.
Well, given the dynamics of the relationship, they're going to be older. They're also going to be more mature, and I think that's going to play a part of it, too.
One of the surprising things that I found about this generation is just how mature they are mm-hmm. in their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We really think of them as a, you know, an overfed generation
mm-hmm.
in so many different ways. They're much more knowledgeable. They're much more sophisticated. They're more positive about their future in many ways, as challenging as they know it will be. They're the first generation not to aspire to be more wealthy than their parents because they know it's an unrealistic goal for many. they like their parents. This is the first generation that I remember that is not threatened by the idea of moving back into their parents' home after college, and where the parents are actually not threatened by the kids wanting to move back or needing to move back in by the home. There's a really pretty positive relationship between parents and the kids of this generation, and I think that will extend, unlike the older millennials who are a little more spoiled, a little bit more a part of the me generation that's been handed down to them by the boomers and the X-gen. The internet pioneers, the hooked-up generation, the internet natives are growing up with much more of a sense of reality about the future. And in that context, they're very mature.
Well, essentially, you know, we're talking about communication and relating and how the internet has impacted every aspect of life.
So many adults, parents, see their kids sitting on a couch texting and, you know, maybe even texting a person who's in the next room, or walking along in a small group where you see a group of them texting and they're talking and texting each other and having conversations within conversations. They manage upwards of 10 or 12, sometimes even more, texting conversations at the same time, going back and forth, linking people together. It's an incredibly hooked up generation, and they understand communications better than any prior generation in history, because the communications tools they've grown up with have been increasingly more and more sophisticated. Not just the internet, but the mobile phone has been a part of their lives since a very young age. So they, you know, they're texting, and as video becomes more and more prominent, and as you will be able to do multiple video networks where people can tie 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12 people together into video conferencing, both online and via mobile. Facebook is developing those tools through a new tool called Airtime, and there are many other. Skype is developing those capabilities. We're going to see an acceleration of the communications capabilities and technologies over the next 10 years that'll make the last 10 years pale by comparison.
So really what we're talking about, I guess, would be a cyber society which may be disturbing, whose access may depend on individual economic status. Because even today, there is a large segment of the population who do not have computers. So do you feel, because economic status is going to influence them, are we going to leave a group behind?
I believe it's just the opposite,
okay,
Liz. Because almost everyone has a cell phone. And the black population, the Hispanic populations, often have more sophisticated and more advanced mobile technologies than some of the more affluent markets. And, you know, the nature of the urban communities have really fostered a very aggressive and high adaptation rate of mobile technology. So what I found in my research is that the African-American communities, the Hispanic communities, were actually more advanced in many ways in their sophistication in using the internet via mobile. And in many ways, marketers and others are looking at their uses as a pattern for how the rest of the culture will follow, because they are, in fact, more advanced. So I believe it's just the opposite. I believe we're finding that the internet and mobile technologies and the generations who know how to use them so well are breaking down a lot of the traditional economic and cultural and societal barriers. And that extends to the fact that because online everyone's equal, when they ultimately interact in person, there's far less of a sense of cultural, economic, and societal differences. They really don't perceive those differences based on what type of house they live in or what neighborhood they live in or what their bank book reads or what kind of car they're driving. They're much more measured by whether they have, you know, the latest mobile technologies in their hand or not.
And that's an important fact, because I agree with you that we do see, you know, young kids of all ethnic backgrounds with the most sophisticated cell phones and whatever. But there's still that population that doesn't have them. And I just wondered, you know, where they will fall. Will there be access in another way, even? You know, I mean, that's just speculation to look at.
Well,
there.
You know, we're seeing more and more cities.
Let me ask you to hold your thoughts for a minute.
Sure.
We're
going to
take a brief break, and I'll get right back to you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we're talking with Jack Myers, author of Hooked Up, A Generation's Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. What's the 411? I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I'm joined by Jack Myers. He shares with 411 Teen his insights on the transformational effects of society resulting from the development of the internet and advances of interconnectivity. Jack, I had to interrupt you, but you want to continue?
Yeah, we're talking about the percentage of the population that may not have access to mobile phones or the internet. More and more communities are developing universal Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. free Wi-Fi.
Right.
Mobile phone costs are coming down exponentially, while it still costs, you know, significant amounts mm-hmm. of money for monthly service. There's more and more competition, and costs are coming down. So if we look forward a couple of years, I think the percentage of those young people who do not have access to mobile technology or the internet are going to be extremely small. And while we're seeing growing economic disparity in the country due to a lot of the political realities we're confronting, I believe that this generation is going to be forcefully active online in looking for ways to create more economic balance and to make sure that no generation is left behind.
Jack, how is this generation, the hooked up generation, how are they likely to impact politics and media, you know, especially with this election coming up, a presidential election? What are you seeing?
Well, because they've grown up with so much polarization on social issues and economic issues, they have strong opinions, and they're willing to voice those opinions, but they're likely to start the sentence with IDK, I don't know, because they don't want to the other person to feel like they're imposing their opinion on them. They have no tolerance, no patience for those who are intolerant of even listening to the opinions of others. They're open to voicing their opinion, and they're open to listening to the opinions of others. But because of the reality of the economic era that they grew up in, and the political polarization, and everything from, you know, the war on terror, and the presidencies of, you know, the impeachment of Bill Clinton, the presidency of George Bush, the turmoil that President Obama is experiencing in his presidency, and the increasing polarization, they're sick and tired of it. They don't like what's been happening for the last 20 years, and I believe they're going to be a quiet but very socially conscious political force, and I believe they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. They grew up with 20th century politics controlled by politicians, the news media, corporations, increasingly controlled by corporations. But they're the bridge to the 21st century politics that I believe are increasingly going to be impacted by wikis, by collaborative online enterprise, by social media, by one-to-one online discourse, by Twitter, by Facebook, by Reddit, by YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I believe they will be extremely influential in using those tools to advance their political agenda. They're very skilled at using online, being active online, even though they're not activists out on the streets demonstrating.
Is this generation less or more eager to take a stand for issues they believe in? Are they the activists that we know of?
Well, they're not out marching. We know that about them, but they are online. They're marching online, and they're marching pretty much to a steady beat of moderate and progressive politics. 90%, only 10% of them say they do not intend to vote. So there's a good chance upwards of 80 to 90% of them will vote in the next presidential election, and thereafter of those who are of voting age. And this is a bloc. 21 million of them will have the opportunity to vote, many for the first time in a presidential election. And their politics tend, 70 to 85% on any issue tend to be on the progressive and moderate and more liberal side. So they believe that abortion should be legal. They believe that gay marriage should be legal. They certainly believe in voting rights and the equality of voting rights. And they believe in women's rights. And they were very turned off by the debates a couple months ago between Rush Limbaugh and Sandra Fluck about women's rights and medical rights. They believe that medical insurance should be provided by the government to a majority of people, and that the government costs. They do not believe that taxes should not be increased at all, and they do believe the wealthier should pay increased taxes. So I believe, and the research tends to support, that they will be a very influential voting bloc. And more importantly, the internet pioneers, the hooked-up gen that I'm writing about, the born 91 to 95, will be the most influential group in helping to form the opinions of the internet natives who will be voting in future years and future elections. So So because of their knowledge and their ability to use online tools so effectively, I believe this generation will be influencing politics for decades to come, and that we will see a steady and progressive drumbeat from toward more progressive and toward more moderate politics focused on collaboration, focused on integration, focused on human rights, focused on balance and stability. And I certainly hope that's the case, and I hope politicians read the book and listen.
Yeah, I strongly encourage everyone to read the book. I mean, it was just fantastic. You did an excellent job.
Thank you.
What role does religion play for this hooked-up generation?
Religion was really, it's probably my favorite chapter, mm-hmm. because this is a generation that is very spiritual. They believe in another plane of existence. They believe that there is life beyond this life. It's almost instinctive to them. There's a biologist, his name is Rupert Sheldrake, and he writes about a powerful energy field that's all-knowing, all-powerful, all-inclusive. And when you read Rupert Sheldrake's work and when you read some of these descriptions, you could say, this applies to the internet. It's all-knowing, it's all-inclusive, all-powerful. And then you could also say, wow, this describes God.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, this is a generation who is finding God in new, very powerful ways. They're finding God in themselves and in the power they have through the internet. And they're becoming increasingly spiritual. At the same time, they're fundamentally less adherent to religious orthodoxy. Issues like gay marriage, when they see practically and online and on television and in movies and in their day-to-day experiences within the music industry, and they're interacting with gay people, they're not willing to accept that dogma tells them they have to reject mm-hmm. those people, that they can't accept them as equals. It's just illogical to them in many ways. So they're moving away from religious orthodoxy, yet they intend to stay within their religions. They intend to bring up their children within their religions or a religion, but they intend to bring them up with a belief in a God who is a God who's more accepting of human equality, of accepting of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all.
Mm-hmm. One of your chapters, you examine how the media, like old Harry Potter or Rugrats and Family Guys, has influenced the hooked-up generation. Would you talk briefly about that?
So much fun looking at studying and finding out what their influences were as they were growing up. And first of all, this is a generation that's incredibly defined by Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed Jerry Laybourne, who was the founding chairman of Nickelodeon, and she shared with me the Declaration of Kids' Independence that they wrote when they launched Nickelodeon. And some of the tenets of that declaration were so consistent with the research I had done about who this generation is. So, and when I asked them in our survey, what were your favorite TV shows from when you were 12 or younger? 5 of the 6 shows were Nickelodeon shows, mm-hmm. SpongeBob SquarePants, Rugrats, Doug, all that. They loved Clarissa. And also, when I asked them their favorite programs of all times, their favorite TV shows of all times, the boys said Family Guy, and the girls said Pretty Little Liars, which is only 2 years old.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah.
And so I looked in depth at those programs, at Nickelodeon, at the specific programs, at the Family Guy. And what I found was so consistent with the research on what defines this generation, who they are, what they're like, what they love. So even Pretty Little Liars and its kind of fantasy storylines. But yet there are stories within the stories of relationships, of troubled relationships. You look at shows like Doug, with a young boy moving to a new community and adapting to that community, and his dad, and how he related and what his experiences were. And the kids really learned from Nickelodeon, but they learned very, very positive lessons about life that Nickelodeon was conscientiously teaching about human equality, about the embrace of diversity, about the fact that you could be a little, you know, do crazy things sometimes, and you're allowed to have fun, and you're allowed to be funny, but at the same time be serious and treat relations seriously. And Harry Potter also incredibly influential in so many different ways, and we found so many parallels in many of the Harry Potter stories that I wrote about, breakdown of society and how the good guys sometimes had to break the rules in order to defeat oppression, and how sometimes you have to revert to magic, and this is a group for whom they make magic every day online. And I think, you know, ironically, in 30 years we'll be looking at several of the Harry Potter books and seeing things in those books that are very much like the science fiction writers who wrote 50 years ago and anticipated a lot of the things we have today. Harry Potter will be looked at as one of those books that anticipated a lot of the magic that we'll have soon.
As we look at the future and we look at the hooked up generation's priority, what do you think will be their approach? What will they change first? Where are they headed?
Well, the biggest issue I believe that they'll confront first is education. I think many of them will go into education for careers, not just traditional education, but online education. You know, this is also, in addition to being the first generation to grow up online, a generation that's grown up with the economic upheaval and the political polarization, they're also the first generation to go to college having grown up with no child left behind. And unfortunately, no child left behind, did leave behind several of the more important, the arts programs, the physical education programs, the drama programs, the home economics programs, the technical instruction programs. So I believe we're going to see more and more learning programs where internet tools will be taught, gaming will be taught, online commerce will be taught. And they're going to be taught heavily online. Schools are going to have to adapt to using online education to bring a lot of these competencies and curriculum back into the schools, into the grade schools and high schools, as well as the colleges. And they're going to do it by hiring, rather than experts in each field who can teach a specific course, they're going to hire curators who can aggregate all the online knowledge and resources and help interpret them and introduce them to the students. And students will learn how to learn. They'll learn how to use the internet. So in many ways, this is the generation that's going to be teaching how to teach using the internet. They're going to be the first generation to have a natural, instinctive understanding of how to use the internet as a teaching tool. So I believe they're going to be tackling education first. They're going to be moving into business and into marketing, and I believe they'll make a huge difference in those fields as well.
In the last minute of the program, would you just kind of share what excites you most about the future for the hooked-up generation?
You know, they're inheriting a very what seems to us to be a very bewildering world, sometimes bent on self-destruction. But what I'm excited about is that I have, studying this generation, the hooked-up generation, has given me an optimistic outlook on the future. we're going to see over the next decade, two decades, technological acceleration that far exceeds anything we've seen in the last two decades. And this is a generation that's going to be able, naturally and instinctively be able to use those technological advances, those new applications to advance society. They believe in social good. They believe in using these tools for positive ends. And I believe they're going to have an extraordinary impact on all aspects of culture and society.
Well, Jack, thanks a lot. It has been real. I've really enjoyed it. I mean, you shared a wealth of knowledge for my listening audience.
It's been such a pleasure being with you, and I'm so happy to have this opportunity.
Okay, thank you. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Team or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcasts, log in wfsu.org.